Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today's guest is a renowned musician who's toured and recorded with the legendary bands Supertramp, Toto, and Pink Floyd. He's also worked with a wide variety of music artists, including David Cassidy, Gorky Park, David Lee Roth, and Hang Dynasty. But what makes him even more fascinating are his innovative business ventures in the world of technology, post-production, interactive multimedia, software development, distribution services, and cyberspace management enhancement for content creators. For over 30 years, he's been at the leading edge of technology entrepreneurship in the entertainment industry. In 1987, he founded an audio and video post-production company called Walt Tucker Productions that produced projects for the Rolling Stones, Bon Jovi, Janet Jackson, Garth Brooks, and many other music stars. Then in 1993, he co-founded a company called Seventh Level, which created educational entertainment software called Toonland, featuring Howie Mandel and its flagship product, the interactive musical CD-ROM Monty Python's Complete Waste of Time. In 2004, he co-founded the New Media Broadcasting Company, which developed interactive distribution services for content creators and consumers, and created a communications platform connecting diverse audiences, artists, and content owners through a collaborative online network. In 2011, he created a company called Direct to Care, which provided an online social business and presence management network for healthcare professionals. And in 2014, he launched Get Your OPI, an online presence management company focusing on improving cyberspace presence for individuals and entities through analysis of their existing results on internet search engines. He served as CEO of Ignited Network, a startup music accelerator based in Los Angeles. And currently, he's the CEO of Think-EXP, a company which is revolutionizing the entertainment industry with technological innovations, creating one-of-a-kind live immersive concert experiences. Our guest is also a philanthropist, and he's used his music to raise millions of dollars for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. I'm delighted to welcome Scott Page to our show. Scott, thank you so much for being here.
Wow. Dude, that was quite, reading that, that guy must be really old if he did all that.
Well, he doesn't look it.
I know, it's crazy, except for my shirt. So I got my funky shirt. Believe it or not, this crazy shirt was just given to me. It's actually a it's so funny because I walk down the street, people think I'm homeless, but it's actually a designer piece that somebody just gave me. It's the most comfortable shirt I've ever had, but it's funny.
Well, I want you to be comfortable, and I want to start by paying tribute to your dad, Bill Page, who was a renowned musician. He played with the Lawrence Welk Orchestra, with Judy Garland on the Johnny Carson show. Yep. And you played trumpet with him on the Lawrence Welk show on their Christmas special when you were only 6 years old. What did that feel like?
Well, that's really funny. Yeah, you know, my dad was on that show for about 15 years. So I grew up on early television because that was one of the earliest television shows. And yeah, I'd actually done that show probably 7 or 8 times throughout my years with my dad being there. For me as a kid, because you can imagine, right? Television was, there was only 7 channels then, you know, it was 2, 4, 5, 7, 11, and 13, whatever that is. And so that was it. So every weekend, it was the Lawrence Welk show, the variety show, which is funny because that show is still on television. I think I just read that it's the longest running television show in history. It's because it's never been off the air. It went to syndication and it's been syndicated ever since. So, you know, it's actually very interesting. But yeah, my father was a serial entrepreneur also, which was very interesting. We had boat businesses, lighting businesses, candy business. We owned 26 donut shops at one time. So I grew up making donuts. And then my father also was one of the co-inventors of the wah-wah pedal, the famous guitar pedal that, you know, is basically revolutionized the music industry. And then also he started the recording studio, which became Sound City, which was one of the famous studios, Los Angeles studios in the world, right? Some of the greatest records from Nirvana to Fleetwood Mac. I mean, all those incredible classic records came out of there. So I've been around the music business and been around this entertainment stuff for a long time. It's kind of wild to think about it now. And looking back, is at the time, you don't really think much about it. You know, I remember the day my dad came home and said, "Wow, look at this. Look what we came up with, this pedal." And he set down this little board with this little pedal on it. It was the first wah-wah, right? And I remember sitting there, and I was a trumpet player when I was a kid. He started amplified instruments. He basically took a hearing aid and, you know, is almost a speaker, is like a microphone, turned that around, connected it to his clarinet, started amplified instruments. And that's where this all sort of started coming about. Yeah. So yeah, it's been very interesting journey for me, you know, going from, you know, Lawrence Welk to Pink Floyd. I can honestly say I'm the only human in the world that's ever played on Lawrence Welk and Pink Floyd, which is crazy. Although I will say the Lennon sisters, some of their kids and their family actually became the background singers for Roger Waters. So there's a little bit of sort of tie in there with the Lawrence Welk show, but it's pretty funny. Lawrence Welk and Pink Floyd, now, who would have thought of it?
If you're a coffee lover like me, it's always fun to discover a great new blend. I recently found a terrific new company, Breakfast at Dominique's, that's created a series of coffee blends to honor the legacies of the greatest Hollywood legends. And I'm thrilled to tell you that now, Breakfast at Dominique's has introduced the Harvey Brownstone Talk Show Blend. It's my very own exclusive, delicious, bold, rich, balanced, medium roast coffee, and I just know you're going to love it. It's made from high-quality organic beans produced using fair trade practices. If you'd like a great cup of coffee, give Breakfast at Dominique's a try and order the Harvey Brownstone Talk Show Blend at hollywoodblends.com. They'll ship it right to your door anywhere in the world. Sipping our coffee is the perfect way to watch our show. What did your dad think of the rock music that you played?
Oh, you know, first of all, I had the greatest parents. I mean, I feel like the most blessed human on the planet because my folks were so good. I mean, I won the lottery with parents. My dad, you know, they were always so, you know, just, you know, supportive of whatever I wanted to do, right? Which was great. And so my dad was obviously very excited, you know, for me to actually come into the music business because I studied to be an architect. I didn't really want to be a musician at the time. And then I got in this band with Jeff Beccaro and David Page, which later, you know, became Toto, but we had a kid band beforehand. And we started winning all the battle of the bands. And I was a draftsman at that time, you know, and I was working, drinking 10 cups of coffee a day, drawing. And then we were in this battle of the band stuff. We're winning all these things. And I noticed there was a lot of girls in the front row. So I said, you know what? I think I'm going to be a musician. This is much more exciting. So there you go. I switched my career around, you know, basically took my drafting skills, became a music copyist to support myself while I was trying to learn to play the, you know, play music good enough that I could get a music job. And then, you know, study 24/7. Next thing you know, I'm a musician.
Well, for a while, when you were young, you were an actor in the Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew mysteries, and on The Young and the Restless. Did you ever seriously pursue an acting career?
You know, no, not really. It was actually very interesting you bring that up. The shows that I've been involved, weren't any of those that I did in that case, were always around music and musicians. So I was always incorporated as a musician in those. I always laugh about the Young and the Restless show, mainly because it was one of those shows that I was brought in. There was a Michael Damian, who was the actor, played a role called Danny Romolotti, and he had a band, and I was in his band. So for about 18 months, that the show revolved around this rock and roll star, and I was part of that thing. And so we would get together once a month. We would go in on a Friday at 6 a.m. in the morning, and we'd usually be finished by 1 o'clock lunchtime. And we shoot four shows that time. And I used to laugh that it was my favorite job because I could work that one gig and it would pay everything I needed, for the entire month. So I made enough money on that one day, which allowed me enough time to kind of pursue my musical career and do other things. So no, I was very thankful for that job. And it was funny, Lawrence Juber, the guitar player from Wings, Paul McCartney's band, was also in that. So it was me and Lawrence and that. And we loved that gig. One day a week, ooh, I loved it.
How could you not? You toured with Supertramp on their Famous Last Words tour and again on their Brother Where You
Where You're Bound
Bound
tour,
tour.
yeah.
How did you like life on the road?
Well, you know, for me, I mean, oh, listen, I've been able to go around the world a half a dozen times, you know, playing music and with different bands. And, you know, with Floyd, we were out for over 2 years on that one tour. Supertramp, we toured a lot. It was, you know, I got lucky because the bands that I mostly toured with were all kind of A-level type bands. And so we were treated pretty good. You know, people would say, oh, it must have been really rough out there. And I got to be truthfully honest, it was pretty soft cush, staying in 5-star hotels, you know, somebody carrying your bags around, and all they had to do was show up in the lobby and you'd get in a car, and next thing you know, you're on a plane and you show up in the town. And, you know, we're working, you know, with Floyd, we basically really only worked at most 4 days a week, if that, because it was such a big thing to move. It had to play a show, and then we had to have a day off for the stuff to get moved around. And sometimes we do multiple days in places, but, you know, for me, it was an incredible ride. To get to see the world like that was extraordinary. Now, I know there's a lot of rough tours. It can be rough out there, so I'm not making it. But for me, it was, you know, I got really, really lucky and had just really incredible time.
Well, after your work on tour and in the recording studio with Supertramp, you became very well known as a member of the band. How did you cope with the fame that came with that?
You know, I never really, it's really interesting, you know, both Pink Floyd, Supertramp, they weren't bands like, you know, I actually conducted for David Soul. I don't remember if you remember David Soul. David Soul was Starsky and Hutch, and I was conducting for him and in his band at the height of his career. So I saw what it was really like to be pursued. I mean, you couldn't sit down and have lunch. There'd be people surrounding him all the time, and it was very tough in that. What I can say about the bands like Pink Floyd and Supertramp, they're not necessarily household faces that everybody really knows, right? So for the most part, it's been pretty, it was okay. You know, I mean, obviously get recognized and get some of that. And to be truthful, it's very nice and very, I'm very thankful for that interaction, because it obviously it breaks the ice. It's a wonderful thing to talk to people. People want to talk to me, which is great. So it gives me that little advantage. So, you know, again, it's actually been a real blessing in a sense, because it has given me opportunities in business. And I'm not going to lie, if people, you know, when I want to go talk to somebody, if they find out I was with Pink Floyd, it's amazing. They'll talk to me, right? Which is great. And so I'm so thankful for that opportunity to have that little piece of history with them. And it's been very, an incredible, incredible ride. But yeah, from the fame point of view, it's been okay. I never really had too much. It's kind of nice to have people come around and recognize you once in a while and say nice things, which is great.
Yeah, well, you certainly had a reputation for being a very nice guy and very humble, and you didn't let it go to your head. Now, in 1985, while you were still working with Supertramp, you began playing with Toto and you went on tour with them. And then you joined Pink Floyd and played on their Momentary Lapse of Reason tour. Did you have to make a lot of adjustments in your musicianship and in your showmanship, depending on which band you were playing with?
You know, that's an interesting question. No, not really. I think that's part of why I got picked. You know, one of the things I always tell this story about, I actually had a chance to work with Diana Ross. And Diana Ross was one of my biggest mentors in so many ways, which is so interesting, because who would think Diana Ross, right? But that she was the one that really showed me the power of presence, of, you know, basically how to stand to create things, how to move hair. I grew my hair. I had this crazy mullet for years, mainly because of her, because I saw her moving on the stage and how she flew around when I played with her. I watched her patterns. I saw things. She basically, I learned sort of the tricks of performance and things through her. She was really instrumental in me thinking basically how I play, what I do, because I realized that, you know, part of this business, it's called show business. It's not just playing music. There's a whole other part to this. So yeah, she was very important for me to start to learn about how to, what I say, wear my own clothes, right? Because I think that's one of the most important things for any musician, for any artist, is what is it you do that's unique to yourself? How do you sound different than everybody else? How do you move different? How do you act? I mean, how do you stand up and rise above the noise, right? So what is your unique sort of value proposition that makes you different? And so those are the things that I really focused on as a musician, because, you know, truthfully, I'm not that great of a saxophone player. I'm going to just tell you, when it comes to saxophone playing, I mean, I know some great saxophone players. Now, what I will say, I think I'm a very good stylist. I have my own style, my own unique thing that makes me different than I think other people. But, you know, while everybody else is going ba ba da ba ba da ba 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 da, playing all these crazy notes, I try to play melodies and play stuff that people can understand. And so I'm ba 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 ba. I went and played kid chords. I really went and focused on a specific area of music and really tried to create a style. And I can actually say that Dave Gilmour was really instrumental in changing the way I thought about music, mainly because I consider him the master of melody. He plays beautiful melodies that anybody can follow. You don't have to be a jazz guru, somebody that's trained their ears to understand complex music notes and being able to follow that. He plays stuff that people can memorize and sing. I mean, if you think of the song Comfortably Numb, there's a guitar solo in the middle. If that solo's not in the middle, it feels like you left out a verse. Right. You've let somebody didn't sing the song because the melody is so thing. Your people can hum it and sing it. So I changed my whole style because of him and really started learning to play simpler, more melodic, and really thinking about the spaces that I leave when I'm not playing as opposed to when I am playing. And so I really tried to create a style that people could follow and understand, and really around just, I don't play adult chords, what I call, I stay away from jazz. I can play some, but that's not really my expertise. I really focus on, you know, kind of rock, R&B, blues, that kind of that area of stuff.
Well, you definitely made an impression. I mean, Nick Mason, the drummer from Pink Floyd, said you were a stage show in your own right because of your showmanship, the mullet hairstyle. And I love the fact that Diana Ross, who certainly knows how to put on a show, gave you all those tips. Now, tell me about your decision to change your primary focus from being a musician to being a businessman. How did that happen?
Well, you know, this goes back to the interest. When I was younger, I always really wanted to do three things in my life. I always said I wanted to do kind of my music piece. And then next, I wanted to do business. And then third, I wanted to do documentaries. So I've been actually collecting and pulling stuff together my entire career. I have a massive archive of stuff that I've collected. And actually, it's interesting. I was just picked as one of the 222 artists that having all my collections of everything going to the moon. So it's going on a hard drive, a special hard drive that's supposed to last a billion years. It's being shipped up on a Falcon 9 space thing. We're waiting. It looks like possibly in November is being landed and dropped on the moon, which is funny because I actually put all my Pink Floyd photos. I put my entire career on this hard drive of everything, digital twins of everything I've had, all my memorabilia, every photograph, every Supertramp photo, every Toto's photo, every Pink Floyd photo, everything. So it's funny because I'm actually getting to put Pink Floyd onto the dark side of the moon, even though they did the music. So I'm the first one to actually put that stuff up there. So yeah, I'm excited about that. But you know, business to me was my second piece. And so I've really been focused on the technology space. I've had four companies. I took one of them public, which was the company that was called Seventh Level, which was great. And that's where I was able to co-produce and direct the world's first interactive cartoon that starred Howie Mandel, which we talked a little about, called Toonland. That really got me into the tech space. So since then, I've launched multiple tech companies. I'm actually right now have a new company. We've just are launching in the next month, a full launch. We've done our beta, sort of pseudo beta launches called Loot 8, L-O-O-T 8 dot. And if you go to .io, L-O-O-T 8 dot io, you can learn about what we're doing. But we just announced we're doing a reverse merger and becoming a public company. So I'm excited about that thing. And I'm very excited about what Loot 8 is. Loot 8 is really focused around the Web3 space. So we've built a complete Web3, what I'll call at the highest level, sort of a content management experience platform using NFTs and crypto and regular stuff to basically onboard Web 2 people into the Web 3 space. So it's a very exciting time for us. And I'm very thankful to have been, you know, I'm having more fun now than I've ever had. And I can't believe it. After all these years, it's just been a blessing for me, truthfully.
Well, first of all, congratulations on ending up with your entire body of work on the dark side of the moon.
It's crazy.
I think that's monumental.
It is amazing, actually. Yeah.
I want to ask you, you were involved in an interactive multimedia joint venture with Quincy Jones called QD7, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so back in the day with Seventh Level, that company, we did a joint venture with Quincy and David Salzman. That's QD7. Quincy and David Seven, that's how that is. That was the name of their company. Seventh Level was really at the forefront of innovation when it came to interactive entertainment. And this is pre-web, right? Remember, there's web one, web two, one thing, but pre-web was CD-ROM and interactive multimedia. And we were very lucky that we really pioneered. My business partner, and that was a gentleman, well, two business partners, was George Grayson, who was the CEO of Micrographics at the time. And Micrographics at the time was one of the 20th largest software companies in the country at the time. They were the ones that did the first drawing program for Windows called Windows Draw. And so it was all that early multimedia time frame. And so along with George and then my other partner, Bob Ezrin, who was the producer for all the Pink Floyd records, you know, Kiss did all the great Kiss records, you know, one of the top producers. We started Seventh Level. And in that, we connected up, you know, a lot of the production companies and people out there were trying to get into the interactive space. We obviously met up with Quincy. He saw what we had built because we'd built all these technological tools. We had delivered projects. We were one of the leading CD-ROM companies in the world at that time. There was nobody that could do what we were doing, especially running on Windows. So what was interesting is because George and his team were brought in to basically take Windows and convert it for IBM over to iOS, which was called Mirrors. So the idea was, is they wanted Windows to run on OS 2, which ended up not happening, but it was the IBM platform. So because of that, our engineers were all tied to the source code of Windows. So what they ended up doing is we built a multimedia engine that ran on top of Windows. And because of our knowledge and stuff of how it worked, we were able to create this little engine that could create incredible animated stuff, right? So we had the only engine on the planet that could make Windows a multimedia project, because at that time, everything was running on DOS. It was all down to the metal and you had to use prompts and everything to create games and all this stuff running on DOS. Windows was the first kind of graphical user interface, like which kind of really came from the beginning of Mac, how they moved over. But that gave us the opportunity to create this. And we sold 11 million units of that one title. It was bundled on every freaking Compaq computer, Acer computer. I mean, just everybody had that out there. And that was our start in this game. So from that, it got me into the real business world. And since then, I've launched multiple companies in the business space. Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you, Scott, I've had a lot of musicians on our show telling me that it's become harder than ever to make a living as a musician. But I've heard you say several times that this is a great time for independent artists. Tell me why.
Yeah, this truthfully, this is the greatest time, I believe, right now for independent artists ever. And the reason is for multiple reasons. We're moving from, everything is shifting right now from digital ownership. And this is why I'm so involved in Web3. Web3, NFTs, and this whole crypto really represents freedom for the people to basically take back the power of the relationship and the currency. Because of this Web3 thing, which is based on the concept of what we call decentralization. If people might not understand, I don't know who your audience out there, but if you look at what Bitcoin runs on the blockchain is basically a technology that will kind of gives us the opportunity to verify and verify ownership, whether it's digital or physical, in a very unique way, right? And it runs on millions of servers. So there's no centralized system or anybody that can come in and shut you down. You've probably all heard of people that have had like, oh, I had a million followers on Facebook. Well, they don't like what I'm doing. You're shut off, right? And now you've lost everything, right? Well, Web3 allows people now to basically take back the control of their ownership of their media. Like our platform, Loot8, is fully decentralized. We don't even know who enters in. It's a wallet-to-wallet relationship based on, cryptographics. It's a wallet-to-wallet relationship. Everything you have digitally, you actually own. It's on the blockchain. Even if our company goes out of business, you still have access to everything you have. If Facebook goes out of business or something, good luck trying to get your data, trying to get your stuff, because it's all sitting on those servers. Now, I'm not saying they're going to go out of business, but you understand what I mean. So this is a place where we now have the opportunity for a direct-to-consumer relationship where it's wallet-to-wallet, transaction-to-transaction. We know now that you cannot sell music anymore. There's no place to sell it. There's no place to sell CDs. There's no CD players. There's no downloads of music. We have the streaming business, right, for artists. Worst business in the world, because it's like the model is broken for 98% of the music community, right? First of all, you've got, I forgot, it's like 800,000 or some stupid number of songs that are getting uploaded into Spotify every day. It's just like masses of amounts. So how do you rise above that noise? And the model is roughly, you'll collect maybe, $3,000 to $5,000 maybe on 1 million streams. Sounds okay. The only problem is out of the entire Spotify catalog, only 2 to 3, maybe 4% of the entire catalog even reach 1 million streams, right? So there's no business model in that. So the next model is we're moving from global to hives. To groups. So I always say, if you want to survive, you got to build a hive. That's the new model, is building community around a smaller group of people of like-minded. That's where we're going. And then building those relationships and selling into that relationship. Now, perfect example of why I believe Web3 is really, this is why it's so great for artists. I always tell this example. NFTs, again, are the greatest tool set I've ever seen for humanity, for people to take control of their lives, livelihood, the currency, and the relationship. And I can, an example of that is I went to an NFT meetup about almost, maybe it's 10 months ago, might've been last year, I guess, right now, time's flying. This girl gets up, she's 19 years old. She says, I'm a photographer. I love photography. I get up every day. I shoot pictures. I'm constantly working on my photography. I got into NFTs 9 months ago. And she says, I'm so excited because now I live 100% off my NFTs. I pay my rent. I pay my car payment. I pay all my bills. I live off of that. And what's really exciting, she says, I carved off a small piece of the smart contract, is what ties this all together, to my community center. And I had given them 2.5 ETH. ETH is a cryptocurrency. And at that time, 2.5 ETH was worth $10,000. So I'm making this comment. How many people that nobody knows, a young artist that's doing it, can live 100% off their art and at the same time give $10,000 worth to their community center and constantly giving back, giving forward? We don't give back in this model. We give forward to a community center. This is crazy. We just did a drop for a street artist. He sold out his collection in a down market, 5,000 pieces. I think it was close to almost $2 million in 5 minutes. So this is all about what I'm calling, we're moving into the relationship economy. This is the game. It used to be the creator's economy, but now this is the relationship economy. And as we bring these relationships together, it's how do we monetize those relationships by creating value for them? This is an incredible time for artists. They just need to learn what to do.
You know, I'm so intrigued by what you're saying, Scott, because even though I'm not a music artist, I started this show as a podcast with zero following. Mm-hmm. And I've listened to your interviews, and I remember you saying that if you want to build a distinctive brand and a loyal fan base, you have to figure out your purpose, your story, your message. In other words, the problem you want to solve, and then what makes you unique. And now we've got 5 million viewers a month. We're televised in the UK.
Yo.
And it's exactly what you said. You have to figure out what's distinctive. and then relate to your audience and build your audience by being there for them.
Yeah. Yeah. What you stand for is more important than what you sell. So I teach a thing called SPACE, which is story, plan, army, conversion, education / execution, because everything's about that. So real quick, everything is about the story. What do you stand for? That's the most important thing. It's not like someone asks an artist, says, well, tell me your story. Oh, I grew up in Cincinnati and I play guitar and blah. I said, dude, nobody cares about that story.
No.
That story, that's backstory. That's fine to kind of build your thing. The story is, what do you stand for and what problem are you solving? And they go, well, what do you mean? I like to write songs. I like to smoke fatties and write songs. No, I said, this is a new world where if you want to be successful, you have to take an entrepreneurial part. You are a business. You are a startup. So you have to take that. But the story is everything, because for multiple reasons, once you understand the story, then you understand the keywords, the phrases, what you stand for. And now I can growth hack against that story and go find my audience, because we now have the tools to find our exact audience through growth hacking principles and stuff. So that way I can put what I'm doing in front of those people. So the story is everything. Then it goes to the P of the space, which is the plan. That plan then is the story generates the whole concept for how the plan's going to go. For plan, I use all the lean startup principles. If people don't know about lean startup, you can go search lean startup on Google. But lean startup is a set of principles and a process to build businesses. It's used like crazy in Silicon Valley now. And it's anchored by what they call the lean canvas, which is a one-page business plan. And that one-page business plan, you can get it at leanstack.com or .org. I can't remember right now, but it's one of those. And you can create a lean canvas. And it's 9 questions. Answer those 9 questions. First time you answer it, you got to do it in 20 minutes. And then you whittle. You start whittling and whittling. And the beautiful part of the lean canvas is it's not only going to tell you what you're going to do, it's going to tell you what you're not going to do. Because the principles of lean is to do the smallest thing you can do and get the biggest bang for your buck. And number 2 is fail fast. If it's a bad idea, you want out quick so you can pivot. 3rd is do not run out of resources. So if you have $1,000, the last principle is make sure you focus on testing and validating, and you do not spend that $1,000 until you've tested and validated and know you've got a good product market fit. So that's part of the whole, that piece of it.
Well, you've said that artists are now a lifestyle. What did you mean by that?
Well, that's the only 2 things you can sell right now. You have 2 things you can sell: the experience and the lifestyle, right? I mean, right? And in that experience is live events, online chats, hanging out, because people want to feel close to them. I mean, again, if you've seen what's going on, friends.tech is a perfect example of showing that, where they've been out for about 4.5, about 5 weeks or so. They generated $158 million in just a short period of time by creating a relationship. This is why we're moving into this relationship economy. People want to be close to specific people to learn, to build with. And so now with the concept of what we're looking at with NFTs and this stuff, it's now I can build a relationship with these people that are maybe their thought leaders or stuff, but we can also build together where I can give them, as let's say, if it's my passport, my experience that you're signing up for, I can throw some assets out to you. You can build on them. And then through the smart contract, I can share revenue with you. So it's for the first time now, creators, or even if thought leaders and influencers, can now join up and connect up, and we can all build together. So this is a very, very interesting time for new types of experiences and stuff, because again, there's no place to sell, especially music. Where am I going to sell my music? That's it. So this is the new paradigm shift that's moving on.
So some people talk about the number of followers or the size of their audience, mm-hmm. but you've always said that that's not as important as the engagement you have with your core audience, that's what success is really all about, correct?
Absolutely. Remember, I said, this is about hives. That girl that was paying for her living had less than 100 people.
Really?
Yeah, less than 100 people in her thing. They believe in her, because remember, when they're buying her NFTs, they're buying the relationship with her because number one, they like her art. Number two, they think she's going to be big. So if I pay $100 for this piece of art from her and I'm holding that and I own that and her career takes off, my piece of art now goes up in value, right? So this is a whole different game where you can empower your audience to own your stuff. This is all about going small. I teach everybody to go small. Do not reach out to everybody. Find your super fans, because we know that the super fan, that's why the In My Space Story Plan Army. Army is your super fans and the influencers. You go after the influencers first and build your super fan base, because we know from the data, which we have access to now, that 60% or more of your revenue will come from 1-3% of your audience. So in your case, you got 5 million. Your total market, if you take 1% of it, that's your super fan, Arby, and that's where you will generate most of your revenue by offering other things to it. Because I'm just telling you, you are a perfect example of an opportunity to take advantage of this new economy, because you already have 5 million people that care about what you're doing. Obviously, you're doing a good job. Otherwise, you would have 5 million people following you, right? That's really commendable. And I'm, dude, high thumb on you for making that happen, right? So, is the next level is, how do I monetize that? Right now, I'm sure it's through advertisers or through some kind of ways that you're generating, but there's a different relationship here where you can start monetizing the relationship in a way where you can actually start empowering the people that are in your community to build with you. Because the beauty of NFTs is you can build business models on top of them. Well, they're so powerful.
Let me ask you this then. You've mentioned the music industry a couple of times. What do you think of the record companies these days? Are they even necessary?
No, they're done. As far as I'm concerned, that game's over. I would never recommend any artist to go with a label. Now, I mean, unless you're so hot and they're getting ready to throw big money at you, but those people are going to be usually ones that have already made audience, already have the traction, because record labels don't get behind artists anymore and don't build them. That game is over. That's why they built a model of like these subsidiary labels that you can connect up to their distribution, and they let the hard heavy lifting go to these smaller guys that are trying to, you know, get behind people's careers and build them all up. But, you know, for me, the record label game is over. Drake was really, from my point of view, the last artist to get through the system from the old school. And now, you know, they own all the streaming services. They have control of the playlist, which is really the game of that. And so, you know, it's almost payola once again. How do I get on those playlists? Well, you write a check and you can get on those playlists. So, you know, that model is over. It's a new form of engagement, relationship, experience. So you can create an experience that people will pay for. And one beautiful part about NFTs is NFTs also provide what we call access control. But depending on which NFT you have or what you paid for or what you have, allows you specific access to different types of experiences and things that you can do. So this is, like I said, the greatest time, but artists have to go to school. That's why Story Plan Army, then conversion. I got all this audience. How do I convert? How do I use conversion funnels to move them in? And most importantly, everybody has to get educated, because the new business models, the new thing is moving forward. And right now, at this very, very tiny moment, for any artist, I cannot recommend more. Dive into Web3, start learning about NFTs. NFTs are not a JPEG of an ape that's worth $1 million. It's not that. People don't understand the idea of Bored Apes. They think, who would pay $1 million for this JPEG? What they don't understand is what they're buying is a distributed brand. When you own that JPEG, you have access to do what you want with that. So think of Nike. Imagine if Nike. Okay, so first of all, Bored Apes did a 10,000 drop NFT. So what there is there's these different apes. People might have seen them. You can look up Bored Apes, B-O-R-E-D, bored. I'm bored to death, apes. They is a community where they sold 10,000 unique NFTs, and each of those NFTs have different layers of access and control over that asset. So if you bought that one ape, you can now use that ape and create a brand. You can create tennis shoes on top. You can create anything. So if you look at Hugo Labs, who started that, they have Bored Water, Bored Hotels, Bored Coffee, Bored everything. And that's because these token holders are now taking that brand and building on top of it. So I try to explain, just like Bored Apes, it's also, if you look at Nike. So imagine if Nike said, did a swoosh, and they did 10,000 unique swooshes. One swoosh is red, black, green ones, blue ones, green stars, stripes, whatever, to create 10 things. And you own that. And now you can go build your Nike brand using your swoosh and create a product. That's what this represents. Again, building business models on top of NFTs is a whole new way of thinking that will change the trajectory of the relationship economy. And that's where the artist has such a big opportunity, because they want have people that want to have that relationship. Now they just need to figure out what the products, what the things they are going to do to sell to them.
So staying with the music business for a moment, look at all of the singers that have won American Idol or The Voice or America's Got Talent. Most of them disappear. What do you think goes wrong for these people in terms of building their audiences?
It's hard. It's a commitment. You got to go to work every day. You know, what I can say is when I had Ignited Network was one of my businesses, and we built a platform just for artists. Exactly what I'm talking about, this relationship, live streaming, connect, invite only, all of that stuff. So many of these artists like, yeah, man, it's exciting. Let's go. And they last about 2 or 3 days and then they peter off. Right. And bigger part is they're not learning what to do once they have that audience. They should already, if they're going on these shows, know that the whole idea of that show is, it's one thing to win, but what you can leverage out of that to build your audience, but you got to have a strategy. You got to have a plan. That's why going to school right now and learning how to build a business is important. Again, most of these artists that come on and they do these things, they don't really know how to build a business. They think that just being on there and having all these followers is good, but how do I convert those followers into a revenue? Right? That's the issue. And so I think that's a big part of what happens.
What do you think of crowdfunding?
Crowdfunding is a wonderful model. And that's why I think we're Web3. So if you look at Loot8 is a next generation thing that kind of is a cross between crowdfunding. It's got OnlyFans, and I don't mean OnlyFans from the porn world part of it, that's pretty much turned into, but the concept of OnlyFans, direct fan, and like this friends.tech, this is the new model that is coming out to basically empower these types of businesses, because it gives you this opportunity to create that direct fan engagement and then sell them something that can have value on a secondary market. Because remember, if you buy my NFT and then you decide you don't want to be anymore, you can go sell that again on the secondary market. Now, if my NFT goes up in price and you're able to generate more revenue. So this changes basically the concept of loyalty programs to a whole different game, because now you can hold an asset that you get from me that could have more value. And remember, NFTs, the game of NFTs, or the thing is, it's about the story. NFTs are incredible for telling stories. Why is an NFT valuable? Because of the story. I could say, I can make this cup an NFT, because anything be an NFT. And you say, well, that's just the cup. But then I go, wait a minute, don't you know this was Elvis's cup? And he gave it to Frank Sinatra. And then Frank Sinatra gave it to Beyonce. So this is that cup. This cup is still just a cup, but it has a story now that makes it way valuable. And if I can authenticate that to be real, that's why the blockchain, because once it gets put on there and that's authenticated as what that was, this now has more value. So this is a complete shift in ownership, because we're shifting from where, you know, people say, well, I could just copy that picture. Yeah, but that's not the same thing as owning the rights to that picture and what I can do with that picture. So the digital rights, ownership, and the ability to create scarcity. There's only 5 of these cups on the entire planet that were held by blah, 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 right? I mean, so that now becomes valuable, and the story, and then you can build on top of those stories. So again, NFTs allow you to create something, put a story on it, allows for collaboration, which is incredible, because I can work on a project. Somebody could say, hey, and I've done this. Hey, we're putting a project together. What's the project about? Wow, that's a cool idea. They didn't pay me anything. They didn't pay anybody else anything. They just put the team together. We like the idea. We spend the next 90 days to 120 days creating the project. As soon as we do the drop, we all get paid. We just did this. We just dropped Synthtopia. You can go to synthtopia.world. And look, we sold out the collection in a down market on crypto.com. None of us put up, we didn't pay. We all just put our time in. And then when the thing sold out, we all got paid. That's the beauty of this NFT thing, because it's once you're built into the smart contract, you don't have to do anything anymore. The little robot network over here on the blockchain handles all the transactions and payments for you. So all I did was we watched the drop, we worked to sell it out, we sold it out. Soon as everything was sold out, money dropped in my wallet, all's good. So you can build businesses now without really even having to have startup capital if you've got a good idea and people believe and you got the right team.
And you mentioned a good idea. You've talked a lot about the business model, about marketing, but in the end, isn't it all about great talent, putting out a great product, whether it's a song or a movie or a play or whatever, it's got to be good.
Of course. I mean, nothing changes there, right? A good business is a good business that serves and has value. People will come and will do. That's what I'm saying. You got to go to work. You got to figure out. That's why I say the story is the most important part of the space thing, because you put all your time into that. If you solve the right problems and people care about what you're doing and they're excited about what they're going to get. In this world, we call it the tokenomics. I buy your token. What are the economics around that token? What do I get? What is it? It's not that I just got this asset. Yeah, but by the way, you're going to get to come to all my shows. And you, because you bought this NFT, you get backstage access, right? Oh, well, now I own that backstage access. I'm going to rent that to somebody else. So I can push my NFT and give it to somebody else to use to be able to do things. So there's all these new ways. So you can imagine Rolling Stones, they do an NFT. We're doing 50 NFTs. They're $50,000 a piece. You get to come to 3 of our shows, come backstage with the Rolling Stones. You own that NFT. Now, if there's only 50 of them, well, maybe there's 1,000 people that would pay, $50,000. Well, maybe now the price goes up. So you might be able to take that and turn around and sell it, because there's a secondary market, which we didn't have before. The only secondary market we had in the music business was reselling my records to a record store for $1 a piece, right? Now we have a way that these experiences, because NFTs represent experience, gamification, storytelling. I mean, they're just the most incredible interactive device. They can be brought into live events. That's a big part of our Loot 8 app, is we have what we call geofencing. So it's got it'll fence. I can put a fence, I'm doing an event tonight down at the Hotel Ziggy. Come on down. Everybody that comes down is going to get dropped a free drink token. If you're there between 7 and 8 o'clock, they have our app. You go to the building, you walk in the building, boom, it drops in because you were there at 7 o'clock. At 8 o'clock, sorry, you don't get the drop, right? So there's all this new ways of using tokens to gamify experiences and create, and you charge for those experiences and that relationship. And that's the new business model for artists.
But Scott, let's face it, you've been in the music business for decades. Most musicians have no business sense. They have no interest in business. So when you say go to school, I think it's the managers that and the agents that have to go to school, not the creators.
Yeah, here they all have to go to school. Here's the reason why. As an artist, I can tell you so many times through my history of music, how many artists have gotten ripped off and they don't know, because they're not educated in the space, right?
Right.
So they get labels that rip them off, it makes sounds good. I get this advance. They don't realize it's basically pseudo slavery. I mean, go watch Artifact. I tell everybody here, the movie Artifact, it's a Jared Leto, and it's about his band 30 Seconds to Mars and his fight with Elektra. I think it was Elektra Records. And he explains the whole model after multiple platinum records, everything. He still owed them $1.6 million, right? It's just like this game of money. It's like it's a horrible, horrible deal. And that's why you're better off going like this young girl, 19, building a small fan base. All you need is a hive of people that really care, and you create value for them. They will support you, and you can make a really nice living, and then you scale from there, right? But yeah, that's the point. There's no free lunch here. There, you can play the hit game and maybe you'll get a hit record. if you can, and maybe you'll become a YouTube superstar and you'll make it happen. I'm not saying then that's not viable. It's just that that's the hits game and that's a tough one. Me, I'm a lot more practical. I want to go build something that I know that I can have that will last me for a lifetime, royalties, things that are going to happen. And that's what this is a lot about, because now with NFTs, you bake your royalties into them and it'll pay you. You can still get your royalties for the rest of your life and it'll go to your family and go to everybody else because it sits on the blockchain. If you're doing the right blockchain, you're doing the right things, then it'll be there forever and you'll get paid forever. That's a different game now because digital ownership changes the whole rules.
So for any independent artist or content creator watching, what's the website they should go to get started on learning what you've been talking about?
Well, you know, that's interesting. Everybody keeps telling me I should do a whole post about space. It's really more about, I think, getting up to speed on, I would start diving into NFTs. And what I mean by that is there's two things I tell everybody to go do. One, go to YouTube or just go to Google and type in whiteboard crypto. And what whiteboard crypto is first of all, everybody here should be all getting up to speed on cryptocurrency and crypto infrastructure, because we're moving into Web3. This isn't going away. Billions and billions and billions of dollars in companies and everything. This is going to just start to grow. Clearly, there's a push to try to kill this crypto and all this stuff because, listen, the Western central banks, the systems are getting upturned. They're completely flipping because it's putting the power back in the hands of the people. So there's definitely a fight between the SEC rules and all this stuff, but this is not, they can't fight it anymore because this is global. They can knock it down here, but it just pops up over here. It's like whack-a-mole because of being a decentralized system. It runs on computers all over the world. So how do you shut them all down? You can't. There's no way to shut this down. So it's going to keep growing. So learning this is important. So whiteboard crypto gives you these little 7 to 15 minute explanations. What is Bitcoin? What is staking? You know, how to create an NFT, blah, 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 all that stuff. So go look at those, start learning there. The other one is I recommend a girl by the name of Crypto Casey. Crypto Casey is without a doubt, one of the best educators, clear descriptions, everything, Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, NFT, everything. The reason I say that is you go to school is you need to go in there and start studying this stuff and learning. She did one that I recommend. It's like, what is Bitcoin for beginners? In that one, she also gives you links to a whole bunch of other things. That's a really good place to start. Second of all, go on Twitter, start following, you know, all the crypto hashtags, /NFT, blah, 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 and start seeing those feeds and start joining those communities. And again, Twitter is the real place right now, the main sort of hub for all this crypto NFT stuff that's going on. They have these tons of these NFT spaces, you know, Twitter spaces on NFT Twitter. Well, it's X now. Sorry. Go on to X. I got to get that straight. And they have all those X spaces that are going on. And that's where you just spend time in there, learn. Because what happens is you need to join these communities, start hanging out. First of all, you'll have a blast because the community is so vibrant. It's like really on fire because we've cleaned out all the shaft because we've been in a massive bear market. It's gotten pounded, all the rug pulls, the cheating and all that stuff, because there's been a lot of this because of the human condition. But don't let that discourage you. Just go in there and start learning, because this is the next wave. And those that figure this out now are going to ride heavy. And the other reason this is important, AI is coming along. AI is about to completely change everything. It already is, but people don't realize what's about to go down. And if you're not on top of this right now, you're going to get designed out and it's going to get very ugly. And I'm not want to put fear in people, but they need to wake up and realize that now's the time to get involved in both of those technologies and understand. For me, AI is extremely scary. But at the same time, you cannot stop it from coming. It's going to come. So your best bet is if you're not in there using it every day now and getting up to speed on this and seeing it's going to affect every business, period. There's no question. And many of your businesses are going to be designed out. It's like writers are going to be in trouble because, you know, people that are using this stuff, it's all about the prompt expert, the guy that knows how to talk to the AI to get the great stuff. It's like, you can sit down and say, gee, I need a blog post. You have it in 20 seconds, right? You just, oh, it's perfect. Boom. I'm going to be able to do that. So people that are writers need to go in there and learn and see how they can use this AI to make it better. Now, AI, blockchain, all these new business models are going to start coming around this idea. And so it's like, even with the writer's strike, it is happening in Hollywood. I personally, it's done. I mean, I don't see how this is going to, they're going to survive, because the studios are never going to say, gee whiz, we're not going to start using this technology to move forward. But at the same time, like for the writers, dude, you got access to the people. You got your Twitter X's 24-hour cocktail party. My friend's got only 100 followers and's making a living. Well, if you're a great writer, you can make stuff, create your own stuff. Like this perfect example is Syntopia. Everything about Syntopia World that we just launched is AI. All the art, all the story, everything is AI, because the story is how do, it's a group of folks coming together to combat the Matrix. How do you combat the Matrix? Is by being in the Matrix and looking how to disarm. So we're using the Matrix to try to get people out of the Matrix, but we have to use it. So that's entirely driven by AI. When you go look at the quality of the art, what's going on there? We got people to involve. We got the fans involved in writing the stories by giving us prompts, and we get the AI to drive it. But the goal is to wake people up and get them out of the Matrix to realize, holy cow, we're getting psyoped into all kinds of things, because whoever controls the algorithms controls the people. We've seen it. You can make people one side go one way, go the other way. Why is this all happening all of a sudden? What has changed? We never had these issues before. Well, what's changed is the algorithms. If people pick up on what I care about, and then all I get fed is what I want to hear all day long, because that's what the algorithm, what am I going to think is real? Everything I'm fed, I read it on the news. This is what's happening. This is real. Over here, they're getting totally different information that's being fed to them all day on these devices, right? So it's a very rough time, or very interesting time. And this has been going on for quite a while. So I just tell everybody, you cannot avoid it. Get in there now, figure it out. Because again, with this, the crypto and NFTs, I make a prediction right now. Every business, I don't care if you're a yoga studio, a hairstylist, a bar, a grill, I don't care, car manufacturer, whatever business you're in, NFTs will be part of that business as people start to understand what they represent. So right now, you have a very small window. If you get in now, you can ride this wave. And a perfect example is Spotty Wi-Fi. Who knows Spotty? Probably not very many people know Spotty. Spotty is an NFT artist. He tells his story. I think he was 38 years old, totally out of it, DJ kind of stuff, got into NFTs. Now he's made multiple seven figures on his NFTs. Nobody knows who, very few people. People in the Web3 community know Spotty, but he was one of the early guys getting in. Gabe Weiss, street artist, killing it. Multiple sells out, definitely seven figures multiple times. So the game is, how do I create products that resonate and value for the people that surround me, right? That's why the story, what I'm problem I'm going to solve. Once I find those people, then I can create the content that's going to do that and create the storyline that basically allows everybody to win. That's the beauty of this technology. I can create with my community, and we can all benefit financially and monetary and spiritually and everything else, right?
Well, Scott, this has been one of the most eye-opening conversations I've ever had. It's been such a pleasure meeting you and having this chance to discuss not only your amazing music career, but this exciting direction your career has taken you to. I have to go and do a ton of research now about how to re-engineer what we're doing. Thank you so much for taking the time to appear on our show.
Obviously, you're delivering something that matters to people. They like what you're doing. You don't just get 5 million followers. That doesn't just happen out of thin air. That takes a lot of work. And thank you for having me. And thank you, everybody out there.
Thank you so much, Scott. Our guest has been renowned musician, technology innovator, and businessman Scott Page. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you to my producer, Steve Silver, my director of programming, Deborah Batsafin, my production assistant, Rosa Puzo, my PR director, Laurie Towers, and my entire team at the XBTV One Network in the UK. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time.
Goodbye.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.